Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller. And before we even begin, I want to give a special shout out to the gang at the Madison Area Master Gardeners Association. I had a chance to talk a couple nights ago to that group, and posted a photo of the group, or at least half the group, on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. But they are really nice folks, and well, gardeners are pretty much always nice. I've never met a gardener I didn't like, as a matter of fact. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to like Carrie Mendez as well. Carrie is an expert gardener and the author of the book, The Right Size Flower Garden. Simplify your outdoor space with smart design solutions and plant choices. So we're talking flower garden design. We're talking flowers of all sorts. She'll have plenty of great suggestions for you, and I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And if you've got a photo of your flower garden, love to see that as well on our Facebook page. So do that too, okay? Let's turn to Carrie Mendez. Carrie, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today.
Hey, it's a pleasure and honor. I'm thrilled to be on your show.
Well, I tell you what, I was really looking forward to this. I picked your book up, and I really enjoyed it. I'm skipping ahead here almost a little bit, but I opened it to a page, and I'm looking at this shrub that is cut down. It's like a foot high, and it looks awful.
Yeah. Yeah, scary, isn't it? Yeah, that's what happens when you hire some person who slapped a sign on the side of his truck saying he's a landscaper who really and arrives kind of bloodshot eyed first thing in the morning, and you'd never met him before. This woman said, "I just want these arborvitaes and different evergreens, just slightly pruned. I have to head off to work. I'll be back at the end of the day." She drives back at the end of the day. The guy is gone. Mm-hmm. And here is this, as you say, butchered scene in her backyard. She collapsed. She said, "Oh, my gosh, that'll teach me to check references and not assume people know what they're doing when they say they can prune and shear or whatever."
She had a 15-foot shrub here. She asked him to prune 1 foot off the shrub, and he took that to mean a foot off the ground.
I know.
He cut off 14 feet.
I felt so badly for her when she was telling me this story. And I said, "Would you mind sharing some images with me? And she cracked up. She said, "Yeah, it is not pretty, but it certainly taught me a lesson and gave her an opportunity to redo her landscape because something was left."
Well, it's an engaging book for sure, and it was fun just to open the book up and there's the first thing I see. But it's also filled with wonderful photos and great stories from you and suggestions and tips. And how did you? I was interested to see why you wrote the book, and I think you should share that with our listeners.
Yeah, I will. You know, for me, I mean, I live in the Northeast. For all my life, except the last 2 years, I lived in upstate New York near Saratoga Springs, which is where I garden was zone 4, borderline 5. And then in the past 2 years, I moved to Kennebunk, Maine, which is a zone 5. And the reason I moved here to Kennebunk was actually part of all associated with writing this book. And if I'm going to quickly summarize what happened, I had been feeling for a number of years that my gardens were starting to become too much work, that I was becoming a slave to my gardens. You know, I felt like I was a hostage. I had to go out and garden and care for them. And I started not liking that feeling. And then, unfortunately, my husband had an accident, which thankfully he's not paralyzed, but he broke his neck. And this meant that I had to care for him for quite a long period. I had to basically get another full-time job with salary and benefits to cover expenses for our family because he couldn't work anymore. I mean, my whole life went upside down. And the gardens, which had been a showcase and featured in many national gardening magazines, these gardens that I had, they were the last thing on my list that I wanted to even think about or care for at that point. So that incident was the catalyst for me to rethink how I gardened so that I could truly fall back in love with gardening again, have more colorful, season-long gardens with beauty that were also 50% less work, honestly, 50% less work with smart plant decisions. And since I was going to be doing this makeover anyway to fit my changing lifestyle, I wanted to embrace much more sustainable practices. So I was looking for highly drought-tolerant plants. I was looking for plants that were pollinator-friendly. I was looking for plants that were lower on the deer browse list. I mean, all those, and less fertilizer. I didn't want to keep using fertilizer, you know, pounding with the fertilizer. So this all kind of triggered me writing this book, kind of the journey of how I went through reassessing existing gardens to actually make them work harder for me than I did for them, and to be more embracing of environmental practices, good environmental practices. So that was it. It was an accident that triggered everything for me to then write this book. And the reason for moving to Kennebunk from where I lived all those years is because of my husband's injury. We had to sell the house where we were, which is a beautiful old, kind of like a farmhouse, and move to a single floor condominium, a little unit where my husband could get in and out of the house easily, and he couldn't mow. We couldn't do all these things he used to do, so we knew we needed that additional support, which would come with condominium living, which, gosh, I wouldn't have even dreamed of at this point in my life. But you know what? I love it. I just love where I am, and I'm just finishing an article for a magazine called Small Gardens with Big Attitudes, and that's what I feel I've created here, something that just is very colorful and exciting, but it's so much easier to maintain.
Well,
so I haven't given up gardening.
It really is. You really have done a wonderful job. And the book itself is not only your own garden that you are gardens that are featured, but you have gardens from many sources. And maybe
right.
Talk about how your book's organized.
Well, I kind of covered a number. The one part of the book is, come on, let's take the rose-colored glasses off. Let's take a fresh look at our gardens. And if we want things to change, we want them to be even prettier, perhaps, than they are, and we want them to be much less work, then something's going to have to change. And usually that means some of the plants that are in there have to come out because they're just not high-performing plants. And so I go through a whole kind of a reassessment strategy as you value how these plants work together and if indeed the space needs to become smaller or not. It may just mean switcheroos with plant material that provide more color with less work. And throughout that first assessment couple of chapters, I remind myself and my readers that plants are not our children, and they're not our pets. So if these things are underperformers driving us nuts, demanding too much of our time, it's time to pop those babies out, kick them off the property, donate them to a friend, donate them to a plant sale, whatever. It just means the plant isn't right for you, and we don't have to keep making excuses for it and tending to its needs, right? I mean,
but that's what so many of us want to do.
I know. We're nurturers. Get it. I got it. You know what? I'll nurture my dog. I'll nurture my husband. I'll nurture my son. But you know what? A couple of those perennials that just, okay, I'll point my little finger at big leaf hydrangeas, the macrophyllas.
Yeah.
Endless Summer and some of the others. At least in my climate, and I would assume you're pretty similar to me there in Wisconsin, that they can be very inconsistent bloomers depending on the winters that we've had. So in many cases, I'd be looking at these huge green leaf shrubs in midsummer with perhaps one or two blue flowers on them. They're gobbling up major prime real estate in front of my house. They're wilting by mid-afternoon from the heat as they're evaporating so much water. And finally, I'm like, oh, my gosh, I am so over this. I'm going to take those silly big leaf hydrangeas out, in my case. I'm using more mountain hydrangeas now, though. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to dig out those macrophylla big leaf, and I'm going to replace them with smooth hydrangeas or panicle hydrangeas that are incredibly reliable bloomers, and they require so little water. So, you know, what freedom I felt when all of a sudden I was willing to just, you know, like I say, pull the tooth, just get the thing out of there that was driving you nuts. Am I sounding too hard?
No, I love it. I think these are great ideas, Carrie. Carrie Meddes is our guest today here for Garden Talk, and she is the author of The Right Size Garden. You're going to want to take a look at it. The subtitle, Simplify Your Outdoor Space with Smart Design Solutions and Plant Choices. And you can join in. Some callers online, but there's a line open for you at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Or email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. That's the title of our Facebook page. And, well, enough of my questions. Let's go to Nyla in Milwaukee next. Nyla, hi. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, first I wanted to say how much I enjoyed her book.
Thank you very much.
It was great, and I have already cut back because I moved from a half-acre yard in Zone 6, St. Louis, to a 1/16-acre yard in Milwaukee, Zone 5, marginally. Oh. And so I'm wondering what I can put under my big hostas, Sagai and Sum and Substance, to double up on the space a little more.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me, before I give you some, I think, some cool ideas to underplant those hostas with, are you happier where you are now in a smaller space? Say yes.
No, I really miss having everything. I've tried to jam in as much as I can here, but I'm limited because there were so many things I had that won't grow north of Zone 6.
Yeah. Right. You're stepping into a new territory there, a little cooler like my area. Well, here are some of the ones that I just think are so cool that I use for underplanting, like the hostas and some of my shrubs in the shade. Have you heard of it's a ground cover called Leptonilla?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, I use that Leptonilla. I talk about it in the book. It's a really cool, it looks like a little tiny shrunken Japanese painted fern. So you get that silver, burgundy, deep green. It's only 1 to 2 inches tall, and it just kind of sweeps around. It'll just cover or sweep around different plants or objects. And I love the lightness of the leaf to reflect light and shade. So that's one I use. You know, depending how deep the shade is, I know you said you have Sagai and Sum and Substance.
But we basically have no shade except from houses.
Okay. Well, you know, another one that I like, have you used, I mean, I'm sure you probably use Lamium,
yes.
That I use, you know, with the silver leaf, like Pink Pewter is one of my favorites. Have you used that one?
Yes, I have that in the back. I have only yellow, green, and blue in the front, and only pink, white, and wine in the back in terms of color.
Okay. Well, here's one. Now, a lot of people gasp when I say it, but I use black scallop bugleweed, ajuga, a lot. Bugleweed can be very aggressive. It's a ground cover, so fair is fair. It told us what it was going to do. But I love black scallop because it has those huge, black, shiny leaves with beautiful blue flowers in the spring. And I find, especially if you sweep that around chartreuse plants like Sum and Substance, I think that contrast is really cool. I don't know if you use any bugleweed.
Yes, I have a couple different kinds.
Nyla, you have everything.
I used to.
Well, what about the little barrenworts, the little epimedium?
They have not done very well for me here. I transplanted six different kinds, and I think that my soil pH is too alkaline here. I'm only six blocks from Lake Michigan.
No.
Okay. Have you done a soil pH test?
I have not done an official one. I have used a soil meter that I had, and it shows it at 7.5 pH.
Yeah, that is high, especially for...
The Japanese iris is just curled up and died immediately.
Oh, yeah. I bet. They're so sensitive to alkaline situations. You know, in the book, I also mentioned in my other books, we can work with the existing soil. In this case, it's I don't know what the structure is, but it's certainly more alkaline. So you can find plants that can tolerate that basic condition, but it means your list is going to be much more limited. For me, I would prefer to adjust that pH to get into the high sixes, say, mid to high sixes, and that's going to open up a lot more choices and plants that are going to do much better if you reduce the pH by using something like sulfur in your soil. I mean, I don't know if you're interested in doing some soil amending.
Yeah. Growing some blueberry bushes, which Larry's program always says won't grow here, so I'm not sure about the soil pH.
They won't grow there with unless you do a lot of amending.
I'm doing a lot of amending.
Okay, good. Well,
you know, the other thing to do, and I know this is not addressing specifically the question about around the hostas, under the hostas, but another thing you can do is, you know, when I have a tough soil situation or I need to create like a very acidic condition like for blueberries and some other plants, I really move to container plants now. Because that's a much easier way for me to create that soil condition by using a container of amended soil to the level of soil pH and the structure I want. So I'm finding, you know what, if it's a really tough soil condition and the plants aren't going to thrive in that, I'm just going to pot them up. And so many of these new, I don't know if you've seen the whole new Brazzleberry line of shrubs that are all 3 feet or shorter, these are very compact blueberries as well as raspberries they have right now that are very short, compact plants that really were designed for small-scale spaces, including specialty containers. So you can have a very compact blueberry bush growing in a container. Ideally, you should have several different varieties of that of a blueberry bush that bloom at the same season for the best crop production. But then you grow them in containers. And you know what I do? People will say, well, how are you going to winter those things over? And you're cold. I'm looking at lots of snow right now out the window here in Maine. And what I do is I just, if you have, hopefully, a spot where I just move them into an unheated garage or a shed to basically inch up a zone without having them out in the wind and a little bit more protection. And I just winter them over as dormant plants in the containers.
Mm-hmm. Do you put, I usually put a board underneath them so that they're not right on the cement floor?
That's a good idea.
That's what I do.
Yeah. No, I can see. I have with some of them. You're right. I have just to give a little bit. And some I've even wrapped with bubble wrap. You know,
yep.
If I know I'm really playing, I'm really pushing my odds, but I had to have that plant. You know, I'll also just wrap them around with bubble wrap to get that additional buffer that I need to get them through.
Carrie Mendez, our guest, and by the way, Nyla, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Carrie is the author of The Right Size Flower Garden, and having a lot of fun talking with her as we visit with her about how to make your garden perfect for you if you're pressed for time or space or energy. She's got a lot of advice for you. So give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. I'm Larry Mealer. Brandy Funk, our on-air producer today here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking flowers and flower gardens and having the right size flower garden with our guest, Carrie Mendez. Great to have her listening in. And again, you can join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Or go to our Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mealer Show. You can post a photo and ask a question there as well. We'd love to hear from you. You know, Carrie, one of the things I liked about your book, I mean, great advice all the way through, but your designs, the garden designs that you have in the book, where you sort of show spacing and then where to put various plants depending on the amount of sun, that is really a nice way to do it. Very visual.
Well, you know, It helps some of, I think most of us as gardeners are very visual, and sometimes it just becomes so overwhelming to think about where, you know, we come home with our cars loaded up with plants, and then all of a sudden we unload them from the car or the truck, and we're like, where, how are we going to combine these? How are we going to do this? And so I wanted to give folks just a sample of kind of taking into consideration both sequence of bloom as well as foliage, which is so important to right-sized gardens, how it adds a whole layer of color that we don't get all the time from flowers. And I try to also, in the book, I think I said in general when I'm designing a garden or deciding placement or how far apart to put the plant, you know, a very simple way that I think about it is if a plant is a foot or shorter in mature height, I'm usually placing it somewhere around a foot apart, center to center, or maybe a little less. If a plant matures to, say, a foot and a half to 3 foot, I'm usually spacing them about a foot and a half apart, center to center. And if they're over 3 feet tall, and again, I'm really talking more about perennials here, not shrubs, but if a perennial matures to over 3 feet, I'm usually thinking a minimum of 2 feet apart, if not 2.5 to 3 feet apart. So that sometimes I think people get too overwhelmed or too focused on when they see spacing recommendations, if they're even paying attention to that on the tag, you know, they start thinking, well, 18, 19 inches, 20 inches apart, and they're taking their ruler out there to the gardens. I'm like, oh, no, we need to lighten up. No, no, no. Let's just think in general, you know, spacing foot, foot and a half, or 2 feet apart based on the mature height. And I know that's a pretty simple way of saying it, but I think it works. I don't think we need to complicate things as much as sometimes we do for gardening.
Well, I like those. I like, and I like the, you know, the combinations, and then you can see the flowers themselves and then visualize how they would fit in.
Right.
The design.
Well, you know, when I teach design classes, here's a couple of quick tips I tell people to do. I said, everyone, I think, wants gardens that are going to bloom spring through fall, just waves of color through the gardens. And, of course, we want them to be low maintenance. So what I suggest to people is this. First, make sure you understand your light condition. Do you have sun? Do you have part sun? Do you have shade? Whatever. So let's really take a fresh, honest look of how much light that area gets. Once we do that, understand what zone you're gardening in. Don't go into zone denial, as we say, because we're just going to be replacing plants because we, you know, we wanted plants that were not hardy for our zone. And so once you understand your light and your zone, now it's time to create that ever-blooming palette out in your yard. And so I tell people to just get a piece of paper and make three columns on a piece of paper. I know I'm saying this very simply right now. And label one column for short plants, plants that mature to 12 inches or shorter. One column for mid-sized plants in the gardens, 1 to 3 feet. And one column for over 3 feet, 3 feet or taller. And then, now we got that, and now you can either go to a great garden book with lots of plants. I mean, certainly my book would be a nice book, or mm-hmm. other books. You know, also, I love Bluestone Perennials. I don't know if you work with those folks out of Ohio, but they're a great mail-order company, a great family-owned business that has, I think, over 1,000 different perennials. Now, having said that, I always say support our local independent garden centers, but I will also say Bluestone Perennials has what I think one of the best catalogs in the industry for perennials, and it also now shrubs. And so you can go to this catalog, and you can start skipping through and doing that fun shopping, looking for beautiful plants that you want to see in your garden. And when you find a plant that you like, make sure it fits the light condition and the zone. And if it qualifies, then put that information about that plant in the appropriate column based on the mature height. So let's say it's a garden phlox, a summer blooming garden phlox, and I saw that one, and it's, I don't know, starfire, deep red. I'm like, I got to have that one. So I take the information from the book or the catalog, write it in my column because it gets 3 feet or taller, so I'll put my information in the 3 feet or taller. And then what I'll do is I'll actually cut the picture out of that flower and paste it right next to the information I wrote in the column. And then as I start filling up those columns, Now I've got a reference list that I will be using to actually put into a design. They're sorted by height, and because part of what you're putting in is when they bloom, spring, summer, or fall, it would be very hard for someone not to have spring, summer, and fall plants in each column. Because your goal is, and I hope I'm not making this too complicated.
No, you're not at all. This is great.
But the goal is, I want to have color all the time. Well, if that's the case, I don't care if you've got, well, in some cases, smaller gardens are a little bit different. But every, if you want to think of it, every level, every tier, every bleacher stand seat has to have spring, summer, and fall plants in that level. So that every level continues to change color. So every line, if you want to think, every little tier is just continuing to sweep color. And now you've got a garden that will be just a, give you lots of bling, as I say, that'll look fantastic because you have done a little bit of thinking ahead of time to say, let me make sure that in each part of this bed, the back part of the bed, the middle part of the bed, and the front part of my garden bed, each have plants that bloom spring, summer, and fall in each row, if I can define it that simply. And then you've done it.
We, and on that is such a good way to do it. You know, here's me. I go to the garden center, and I have nothing in my head. So I'm going to look around and see what's pretty here and what I think I have. Let me try this one. This is new this year. Let me try that one. And I have, and then I go home, and then I have to go back a couple of times.
Yeah. I know. You know, but that's, I've worked at garden centers for years, and so we count on you and spontaneous purchases to come into our garden center. I get it. I understand. And I'm not saying we can't have the freedom to go out there and make those fun purchases of what's new and all that. But what I would say, if we're going to do that with existing gardens, which we all do, I was talking more about kind of a starting from fresh, perhaps, yeah. If you're starting. But if you're going to get new plants and you want a garden that's less work, then when you come back to the house and you look at that garden, now in most cases, most people don't know where they're going to put it because the garden's already jammed, right?
Yes.
Right? Fair? Okay, so now we have to do the hardest part. It's not buying plants. It's, okay, where is this plant going to go? And that's where we have to put on another set of lens, if you will, to look for those plants that truly were never performing well, that were more disease-prone, insect-prone, just looked ratty and only bloomed a short period. And those are the ones we're going to have to pop out of there to put that beautiful new plant in, assuming the light is right. But we need, that's, I think, the tough part for most people. They
yeah.
get home and they don't want to take anything out because they're all their little darlings. And I'm like, no, you know, something's got to go or you're going to start jamming more plants in a smaller space. And now what have you done? Well, two big things. You have opened the door to more disease and insect problems because there's less airflow. It's just a really tight space. You're just inviting problems from above. And two, as you start jamming plants in, you have now created more competition for the roots below the soil that you can't see that are all kind of competing for that limited amount of water and nutrients. So now you have plants that are frustrating. They're working so hard in a tight space to get the food and water they need. So what we see above, we see plants not blooming as well because they just don't have enough space per plant to draw the food and the water they need to make us smile like we want to smile. All right? Boy, I'm a rambler. Sorry.
No, you're doing, it's great. It's so much fun talking with you. Carrie Mendez, our guest today, author of The Right Size Garden, taking a look at having the right size flower gardens at your place. So give us a call with your own questions. Have you experienced have some questions about it, or maybe what are your own experiences in maintaining your flower garden? How do you care for your garden in spite of a busy schedule? Do you have some favorite low-maintenance plants that you like, and why? What are your favorite, what are your experiences with ground cover plants? Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or again, post a note on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And if you have a photo of your flower garden, we'd love to see that as well. So, you know, you mentioned a little bit earlier, and I wanted to go back to that a bit about lower maintenance and some a bit about conserving water as an example. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I know that is something that's on your mind, and you use, I think, quite a few drought-tolerant plants.
Right, I do. I mean, I think I don't care if we're on the West Coast or East Coast, we all need to be much more conscious of the precious resource of water and what we're doing in our gardens as well as our lawns. You know, I am very much, when I design gardens for myself or write about gardening, I really am focusing a lot on drought-tolerant plants. So, for instance, here's one people, especially if they have shade or even sun, a lot of people love a stilbe because it is just a great plant with that plumes of color, different heights, and it's deer-resistant, and that's another big thing I'm always considering, how tasty will this plant be to deer and rabbit. So a stilbe is a really great performer, but most stilbe require a lot of water, or they start to crisp out and brown out on the leaves. So I've made the choice of moving to one group of a stilbe to put in my garden. It's the species group called chinensis. A stilbe, chinensis, and then there's all different cultivated varieties, you know, those plants with the single quotation mark, the variety within that species group. But Astilbe chinensis are so much more tolerant of dry shade, or even dry, Astilbe can take sun as well, or dry conditions. So I'm selecting plants, in this case Astilbe, that now will tolerate a drier site, so especially under trees, so I don't have to be watering it as much. Same thing with, of course, we use hostas. I'm using a lot of, especially the native plants, like Solomon's seal. One of the groups that I'm using more in Solomon's seal, which I love for those, you know, beautiful dangling white flowers, but there are more and more introductions now in the market that have highly variegated leaves. So you have a lot of white going through the leaves,
yeah,
so that they really are showy and less light. Varieties like striatum, which we carry at many of our garden centers, variegatum, there's another one called double stuff that's out, so that we get a really flashy leaf that continues the show, not just when it's in bloom in the spring. And it's highly drought tolerant and very deer resistant as well.
Really cool. Karen in Stoughton has a question for you, Carrie, so let's go there. Karen, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Karen. You know what? Hi. You know, the program that I'm listening to on the radio is different than this one, so I don't know if you'll have the answer to my question. It's very bizarre. The show that I'm listening to now that I thought was the current show, the woman mentioned a nursery in Ohio.
Listening. It's the same show.
Oh, it is the same show. Okay, it just sounded different. I'm sorry. And I just didn't catch the name of that nursery.
Oh, the Ohio nursery.
Defer.
And what was that?
Oh, I'm sorry, Carrie. She was wondering.
I don't know the nursery. Do you know, Larry, what the name of the nursery is?
You were talking about a nursery in Ohio, right?
Oh, I see. I thought you were talking about an independent garden center. I'm talking about Bluestone Perennials. They're based in Ohio, and family-owned, very old, wonderful company. Love the owners, Sarah and Bill, and they just have very great quality plants, and I find their catalog to be one of the best resources to tell you, I think, everything you need to know, which includes spacing recommendations, where many catalogs don't tell you how far the plant should be spaced. You don't know how many to buy because you have no idea.
Right.
So Bluestone, one word, Bluestone Perennials, gives you light conditions, gives you, if they're deer resistant, gives you spacing recommendations, obviously the season of bloom, and any other special characteristics like fragrant flowers, deer resistant, drought tolerant, just a great company, great people, and a real, really interesting list of very different plants to use in your gardens.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Karen, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. What about you talked about perennials that are drought tolerant. Annuals? Do you have some annuals that?
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, for sun, I mean, I've really gone a lot to lantanas. You know, I'm looking for, especially for full sun, and especially if it's in an area with a lot of heat, like reflected heat off of a deck or a patio, sidewalk, building, I need plants that can stand up in tremendous heat and sun in the afternoons. And I think lantana is amazing. Comes in a lot of different cool colors. There's a new one coming out this spring that I trialed in my gardens last year. It's called Luscious Marmalade. And Luscious Marmalade is just this striking orange with a little bit of yellow, but just really, you got to like orange. But I think orange in a hot spot can really carry that intensity because that color doesn't bleach out. It really holds that color. Another annual that I think is coming on and more people are becoming familiar with it, and certainly we've carried it at the garden centers I've worked at, is one called Biden's. Are you familiar with that one, Larry?
No.
Okay, it's B-I-D as in dog, E-N as in Nancy, S. And it, most people have seen it probably in container baskets and hanging baskets. It's a little yellow flower that almost resembles a tick seed, a coreopsis. But now they've gotten a whole new range of colors like orange and peach. And these plants have to be, in all my experimenting with plants for annuals, have to be one of the most drought-tolerant, non-deadheading, amazing plants for a hot, sunny spot.
Oh.
And they just bloom right into the fall. They just power on, especially in containers that can be even tougher in some cases to grow plants, especially hanging where you have that heat also from the outside of the pot coming in at the root system. Biden's is amazing. Proven Winners has got a lot of new ones that I just love that I've been using. I'm trying to, you know, as far as Biden's. Some other ones, I use, it's also becoming really big for hummingbirds, you know, if we're looking to invite more pollinators into our gardens. Kufia, a variety called Vermilionaire. Kufia, C-U-P-H-E-A. And the cultivar is called Vermilionaire, V-E-R, millionaire. It's got huge, I mean, not huge, it's got mid-size tubular orange, red, yellow flowers, you know, just calling, flashing for those hummingbirds with the tubular shape and those that color. And it just, it has a vase shape, and it just wants as much heat as you can give it. It's going to be like a rose. Just bring on the heat. I thrive in heat and sun, and that's what this annual is going to do. It requires no deadheading. I don't invite plants that need deadheading into the garden, especially annuals. And so it just powers on right through the season in a container or in the landscape. I use them a lot in the landscape.
Carrie Mendez, our guest today. What fun talking with her. She's the author of The Right Size Flower Garden, and we're visiting her with her about her garden and about your garden, too. If you have a question or comment, join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org. Or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Carrie Mendez, author of The Right Size Flower Garden. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments or maybe experiences to share about your flower garden, flowers that you might enjoy in your garden that could possibly be low maintenance plants, but colorful and attractive. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And Barb in Genesee called and shared that she recently had a house fire. The landscaping 6 feet from the house and down to the foundation on the north and south sides, you know, all very badly damaged. What do you expect now? What permanent damage? Is there permanent damage to the soil and the vegetation? What do you think?
Well, if we're talking black char, I don't mean to make light of that. No, I meant the soil, the condition. I mean, I feel that, if she's totally lost the vegetation, obviously that heat has probably done a number on microscopic life and all the good critters, the soil, microorganisms. But we can bring back soil to good life, and she might have to, I would personally, I'd start with a soil test. I'd grab a sample and just see if there has been any change in the soil. I don't think so as far as the actual nutrients in the soil. But you can take it to, one of your extension offices, Master Gardeners, University of Wisconsin Extension Office, and have a complete soil test done. From the optimistic point of view, I'm always trying to be a perennial optimist. It might be an opportunity just by adding some organic matter, compost, manures, whatever, to that soil, working it into the soil. Now you're adding organic matter and living microorganisms back into that soil, and then being able to start again with a new bed. I don't know how much damage, obviously, was done, but I guess, unless I saw it, I couldn't.
And you could be fairly optimistic. I think, I was thinking about, burns. You have, areas burn off and then they just come back.
Right. And actually, with wildflower gardens, that's the recommendation, to burn the field down. When you do really great wildflower gardens, a lot of these, the burn and the set receding as you do it. Now, in a little development like mine, I couldn't burn my yard to try to get more. But there is, as you said, there's the application of a burn approach where you burn down. It actually rejuvenates a lot of the, especially for seeds. Some seeds need that type of heat. And many times with prairie gardens and meadow gardens, or I should especially say with wildflower gardens, it's recommended if you can do a burn. I mean, I used to work on a big college campus in upstate New York, and we had a whole beautiful bank of a wildflower garden. And every fall, it was managed correctly, but they would burn that whole section down, black it out. And the next year, oh, my gosh, the beautiful plants that would come up, but it was a burn down in the fall. Mm-hmm. And it was, again, controlled, not on a windy day. But it really did an amazing job of keeping that garden producing well every year with some overseeding. Before I forget, Larry, because I always have to make notes for myself, I wanted to mention that I'm coming to your lovely state later this month to speak at Garden Visions, which is a conference hosted by the North Central Wisconsin Master Gardeners. And it's on January 23rd, and I'm flying in to speak on two topics. One is a brand new PowerPoint presentation on how to have front landscapes that are traffic stopping with curb appeal, just to have a gorgeous landscape for front yard gardens, which of course could be applied to the backyards too, but it's design and plant strategies for front foundations of homes and landscapes. And the other thing I'm talking about, I'm doing two presentations at Garden Visions in Wausau. The other topic I'm talking about is my favorite, really, is shade gardening, which is my favorite. I say go plant a tree. I love shade gardening, and I think so many people get overwhelmed or frustrated with shade gardening because they're not aware of the amazing choices, really, of plants that we can use in lower light.
Of people in the shade, with the shade gardening, they want to have bright flowers, sometimes you just can't do that if you've got too much shade. But there are other ways, as you've been talking about here, to bring color.
Right. Well, I call it a perennial coleus because of the amount of just blast of color from the foliage. Who cares about the flowers? One group of perennials I use that gives me that perennial coleus look are called Heucherella. And this is a perennial that has been introduced in the last few years in the market. It's a cross between coral bells, Heuchera, and foam flowers, Tiarella, native foam flowers. And this cross has created a plant, a perennial, that has larger leaves than most coral bells or foam flowers, and it can have such amazing colors in the leaves. So, for instance, two of my favorite varieties, one is called Buttered Rum.
Uh-huh.
That sounds good, huh?
Yeah.
Buttered Rum, and the other one is called Brass lantern, and these have like a gold, a rusty orange, burgundy gold leaf that's huge, that's stunning mounts. I can get, I don't know, 10 to 15 inches tall, so I get this great colorful mound of leaves. And then in early spring, they send up a flower similar to a foam flower, kind of a creamy white flower that's such an important nectar source for early pollinators, insects. So it's just a, you know, it's an all-purpose plant providing a really showy, hot-colored leaf through the fall with the flowers in the spring for early insect pollinators.
That's so cool. Well, that's going to be a lot of fun. So the Garden Visions in Wausau on January 23rd, and we have a link to that on our Facebook page.
Good.
At the Larry Mueller Show. So if people want to learn more about it, they certainly can. And so that's coming up pretty quick.
Yeah, I know. I'm flying out on next Friday. I head on that big plane and go across. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Last count, I think they said there was 250 gardeners pre-registered. So
all right.
We're going to have a great time.
Well, Guy in St. Paul has a comment. So let's go to Guy. Thank you for calling. Okay. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Good morning. I have had a lot of tough garden yards in my gardening career, and one of the plants I've always relied on, since you're talking about hardy garden plants, is the Epimedium. It's called Bishop's Hat.
Yes.
Tolerates, it's death-defying. It tolerates road, sun, shade, everything, and if any kind of problem area where I need to fill in something. It's got a kind of a lovely little forget-me-not red flower to it. Not real showy or anything, but then the foliage gets that copper tinge as the summer goes on, and it's really quite a lovely little thing in a backdrop plant, and almost a ground cover for other more dramatic shade things.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. It is, you know, it's one that is, when people come into, when I'm working at the garden center, and they ask me, what can I plant under pine trees and maple trees, you know, where you have health strip areas with a lot of root competition from woodies. I mean, as you said, Barrenwort Epimedium is just a superhero. You know, put that plant down. And you know what's neat? You have the one with the kind of the rosy pink flowers you mentioned. You can get that in many different flower colors. I have a pure white one called Bandit. You can get the soft yellow. You can get orange. You can get bicolor. There's a lot of neat colors, purple, within that plant family. But I couldn't agree with you more as far as a plant that demands so little of us and performs so well. Not only for the beauty of the leaves and the foliage, but the third thing it does, it's a great weed suppressant.
Yes.
Because the way those leaves, the leaves of barrenwort are overlapping, which means it doesn't allow that light to the soil, which means it just keeps those weeds out of there, which I think does better than any pachysandra or vinca I've ever seen perform in a kind of a shadier area. Barrenwort is the gold medalist. That's, in my opinion, as is yours, it sounds like.
Thanks for the added information. Love your show, Larry.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call very much. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call if you'd like to join in. Dave from Heartland called and wondered if he can overwinter foxglove and lupin by covering them with leaves from his yard.
So certainly it's interesting you're mentioning those two because they can be very short-lived. And with the exception, let me first mention very quickly foxglove. The majority of foxglove on the market are biennial. So by definition, a biennial, first-year leaves, second-year flowers, third year dead. Okay, so this is not a happy ever after story. These things are going to take a little bit more of our attention because we need to make sure when they're in the second year flowering, which is what we usually saw them at in the garden centers as second year plants, we need to make sure that we allow them to reseed in order for that show to continue. So one of the things I recommend, and I will get to that question, but you need to know if it's going to be, if it's a biennial or a perennial variety, because it wouldn't matter if you're trying to overwinter that thing in a container. If it's in its second year, it's going to die.
Yeah.
No matter how much grit and love you give it, it's done. It's done its job. So, but one of the ways I recommend people to have more success with biennials, because really most of the time they're seeding, and those seeds are pretty hardy. It's not the plant you're really trying to, unless it's the first year plant. You really, it'll keep reseeding itself. It's a tough plant. But one of the ways that I say that can make it easier for people who are challenged sometimes like me on keeping track of things is when you go out and buy foxglove, buy one foxglove that's in its first year that has no flowers. It's just foliage. Usually they're sold in 4-inch pots or in quart pots because they're just leaves. And then buy one that's in its second year with those flowers. So now you've already set up the cycle. It's a little easier to have success because you've already got that 2-year cycle started with the plant you put in. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. That's
So that's kind of part of the answer. You know, with the container with foxglove, sure, you can bring it in, but it would really depend on is it a perennial or not. As far as with lupin, which I love, they're beautiful. They are, by definition, most varieties are short-lived perennials, which means ideally maybe 2, 3, maybe 4 years if you're lucky, especially a lot of these cultivated varieties like the Brussels hybrids and others. What I've chosen to do is go with the species variety of lupin, which is the beautiful blue-flowered variety that we grow here in Maine all the time. You see on the banks and all that, those wild fields of them.
Well, a wonderful suggestion and a wonderful guest. Our guest, Carrie Mendez, author of The Right Size Flower Garden. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller, and we're talking about flowers and flower gardens today with Carrie Mendez, who is the author of The Right Size Flower Garden. Simplify your outdoor space with smart designs, solutions, and plant choices. And she's going to be in Wisconsin on January 23rd for the Garden Visions event in Wausau. The master gardeners from that area are having that. We've got a link on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show so you can learn more about what's going on at that event. It sounds like, to me, I was looking at it over the news break here, and it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. And you're doing 2 talks in the one day.
Yeah, I do 2 a lot. I was just in Columbus, Ohio, a couple days ago, speaking at the Sense trade show, and I did 2 talks there. I mean, one was on Heavenly Plants for Health Strips, and the second talk was on really cool, uncommon plants and inspiring design ideas, kind of doing, you know, twisting things up, mixing them up, and how we design in our landscape. So I guess I'm blessed with a lot of energy. I really don't drink much coffee. I just have, I love what I do, and I have a lot of energy.
Well, that's a really apparent, Carrie. It's great to have you with us today. I'm really having a wonderful time talking with you, and I'll invite our listeners again. Call in at 1-800-642-1234. If you have an experience to share, maybe a flower to recommend, or maybe a question to ask about flowers or about designs, landscape design, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We would love to hear from you. And we had some Facebook questions. Anna on Facebook wondered if where to buy plants that haven't been covered with pesticides.
Yeah, that is such a hot question. I was at a conference yesterday or the day before in New Hampshire, a landscapers conference, and that's just, as we all say, it's the hot button. And it's so hard to narrow in on that because, as you may guess, there's so many different stages of how, until the plant gets to retail-ready, saleable-ready size at a garden center. You're starting from plugs, going to liners, moving up to the larger plants. And even if the person growing on the plug didn't use pesticides, the next person may have. And this type of material can stay within that plant for years, as we know. So I think the industry, we're all taking a much harder stance as consumers, expecting what we're requesting now as growers are producing these plants for retail ready. I think we're going to see some changes in the future. It's a really tough challenge, because you can talk to growers, and some of the growers would say, okay, if we stop using this material, then that means we're going to have to go back to using some really tougher, harsher material in some ways that's maybe more dangerous to humans. And so it's one of these catch-22. Now, we could buy that, or we can say, do some more research. There's an answer to this. And so I wish I could give a good answer to that question that person posted. I don't have any one, you know, silver bullet to say this is where we need to go to buy our plants. I don't. And maybe you know, Larry, of some organization or group that can promise. I mean, if it's a homegrown operation, family-owned, and they grow their own plants from start on their site, and they say they don't, then that's great. A lot of garden centers, we're shipping in already retail-ready. We're shipping in plugs that we're going to start to grow on. We're not actually starting them from scratch at our location because of cost and expense, especially in colder climates, to do that.
It's a very, very tough situation. We don't have a great answer.
No, we don't.
Unfortunately. Linda wondered if you were talking about a flower that grew well under pine trees earlier. And she was wondering what was the name of that plant.
That was the gentleman called in also. That's barrenwort is the common name. Epimedium is the Latin name. I would also grow, I mentioned Solomon's seal. Solomon's seal is really tough. It's got a root system that's almost like a tuber, so it can store water, and that's what we're looking for. Here's another one I didn't mention. The common name, and this is a perennial, the common name is big root geranium. And big root geranium, geranium macrorhizum, has beautiful either white or lavender pink flowers. It has a much larger leaf than most perennial geraniums and a softer green leaf and a scented leaf. But because of the root structure, it can just hold on to limited amount of water and slowly release it, so it can be grown in much tougher situations, including low light, which many other geraniums, perennial geraniums, would just give up the ghost. That would be a very tough location. I mentioned hosta. I mean, hostas are hellstrip plants. I mean, they are.
Ann in Milwaukee has a question. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Carrie and Larry. I was wondering if you could please repeat the name of the ground cover that you mentioned before. It sounds like something I might be interested in using. I'm trying to change probably about a third of my front yard into ground cover. And I thought it was described as fern-like.
Yeah, Leptonilla. So I'll spell that for you, because it's L-E-P as in Peter, T as in Tom, I-N as in Nancy, E-L-L-A. And it's starting to get more and more attention in the industry. Mm-hmm. It's usually sold as a in 4-inch square pots, usually through ground cover lines like Jeepers Creepers or Steppables. That's where we usually carry it. And it's a moderate pace spreader, so it's not really, really fast, but it's not painfully slow. Mm-hmm. And it just, I just love using it. I use it, I sweep it in so many different locations, and some can even take part sun, and it depends your zone, but it's done fine.
Oh, okay. I guess I should have mentioned mine will be in sun all day.
Well, perfect, because this is what I'm doing now. When I'm trying to create this, what I call, I have this recommendation of creating quilts of ground cover, especially in full sun where you have heat. Mm-hmm. You don't want to do a lot of watering. You can use this approach on a slope. So what I'm doing is I'm taking different perennials. You can use some annuals, but mostly perennials, and I'm quilting patches of these plants, and I'm using, for instance, one square, and it doesn't have to be the same size, but one section will be one of the creeping sedums, like Angelina or dragon's blood that has deep burgundy red leaves. Angelina has corkscrew, bright yellow leaves. And then another patch near that, I'll put creeping red thyme that has beautiful red flowers and stays low, and these are all good for pollinators too. Another patch, I'll use one of the creeping veronicas, like Georgia Blue, that has brilliant blue flowers with a white center in the spring, but then has, again, all very tight little leaves that keep weeds out as we're creating this colorful quilt of ground covers. Another one I use a lot is commonly called ice plant. Delasperma is the Latin name. Again, these are all perennials.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on your zone, but one of the things I talk about with ice plant, it looks kind of like squashed, flattened daisies. And there are many different zones represented, but what a lot of people don't know is that you can get varieties in zone 4, because a lot of the really colorful ones would be, for some of us, not in our zone, 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. But there are varieties that are zone 4 hardy, which means 20 to 30 degrees below zero, those things can winter through. Mm-hmm. And I use splashes of those. So I'm using just this kind of mix of ground-hugging, colorful leaf plants that have a leaf habit that keeps weeds out, but have a cultural habit that doesn't need a lot of water or fertilizer and gives me flowers. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are just a few of the ones.
Yeah,
and now
great.
My plan for planting is to put newspaper and then mulch to kill all the grass.
Yep.
Should I wait for, you know, like do that in spring and wait for a whole season and then plant the ground cover, or how would
you don't plant? When you put the newspaper down, you layer that down, then you're going to wet the newspaper, soak it. I usually put like 4 to 5 pages of newspaper,
right.
And I soak it down, and then I throw my mulch or my mixed topsoil, whatever, on top. That newspaper is going to break down. Usually it's going to break down within 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay.
If you're really antsy and you can't stand it, and I know I'm a type A person, I get this, I'll actually cut through, I'll push back the mulch if I want to start my planting. I'll push back the mulch, I'll X through the newspaper with a sharp knife, open up that spot, dig down in. It depends what you were covering up. If it's heavy turf, that would be a little harder. But put my plants in. Give it a slow-release fertilizer if I'm going to do that, like plant tone from a Spoma. And then so I can, I'll actually start early if I need to. If I want to make it easier for myself, I let that paper slowly break down so I can just kind of put my shovel right through and start. But you could, you don't have to wait to fall to do that.
Mm. Okay.
All right.
And would I put a small, I'm looking at like wood chips for the mulch, or would that not be good?
I personally, if I'm going to use wood chips, which I'm going to get as finely shredded wood chips as I can, not the chunky ones.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of new material, at least I can say, in the Northeast, and I'm sure we don't have the corner on the market, where now what they're doing for these mulches, they're using a combination of a really fine shredded hardwood, and then they're hardwood bark, and then they're adding to it some type of organic matter, such as compost or manures, or more and more are using biosolids, recyclable, you know, sewage that has been treated.
Yeah.
So they're cutting the shredded wood with some other faster decaying organic matter so that the fertilizing of the soil is more quickly enhanced.
Okay.
But the wood stays longer, so you don't have to keep replacing it all the time.
Right.
See what I mean?
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
Nutri-Mulch is one of the big companies, Nutra-Mulch, that is producing this kind of an interesting mix so that we're kind of getting the benefit of an extended mulch but a little bit more nutrient-rich material to put directly down on flowering beds.
Yes, that is wonderful. Thank you so very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Dan in Madison up next. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Larry. I've got a couple questions. I want to plant some hops and along my fence, which is going, you know, on the west side of my lot. And then I also want to do some grapes. I'm going to do some trellises. And I was wondering how to start, what would be a good kind of hop, and the hops and the grapes, because I want to make start brewing in Madison. We got that going.
Yeah.
No, I love it. That's all I was thinking. Wine and beer, we're doing this whole industry now with having people growing and growing their own brews or in their own wines. Well, you know, hops is really quite easy. I mean, really, it grows so fast.
Oh, yeah, you got to be trellising that.
I know. We, you know, you can put, it'll go, oh my gosh, how many feet? 30, 20, 30 feet?
20 feet anyway, yeah.
Yeah. You know, so dig a hole, throw it in, put it in sun, give it a little fertilizer if you want, and stand back, run for the house. I mean, as I joke, it's not going to need a lot of hand-holding. Although, as I always remind people, even with drought-tolerant plants that I'm a big supporter of, is the first season when we plant these things, we are going to have to provide some additional water as those root systems get anchored in. We can't just plant and walk away and say, okay, done, it's drought-tolerant. And as far as the grapevines, I personally have not done grapevines at this point, so I'm not the best person to talk about that. I would say that, you know, I don't know if grapes need multiple different plants for cross-fertilization, if, or, you know, maybe you know that, Larry. I have not used grapevines before.
We have a great bulletin from the UW Extension called Growing Grapes in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And it is a wonderful bulletin, and it's all about care and varieties. And so I would highly recommend go online to the learningstore.uwex.edu, and that's where you'll find the bulletins. And Growing Grapes in Wisconsin is really, really one of our excellent bulletins.
Great. Yeah. Sounds great.
Yeah. That that's what I do. I haven't, and I know people have used that bulletin and have really had very nice things to say about it. So there you go. Thanks, Dan, for calling.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can call in too, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Donna in Milwaukee wanted to know, back to ground covers. Does the ground cover recommended today take over like a weed? And you've actually talked about more than one ground cover.
Yeah, I mean, some ground covers are pretty aggressive.
Which ones aren't? I think Don is probably looking for one that's not, or some that aren't.
Well, I mean, we've mentioned barrenwort, epimedium, number of times. There are some varieties within that family, and one of them is amazing for just a tight little clump former, is one called Bandit that I grow. It has a stunning white flower. It is almost painfully slow spreading. It slowly gets bigger from the base. It's not as aggressive as some of the yellow varieties and some of the kind of the orangey yellow varieties or purple, but that's one. You know, another one I mentioned is bugleweed, ajuga. Can be very fast, but this is what I remind people. If you want a plant that's going to grow more slowly, I don't care if it's a perennial, if it's a shrub or whatever, ornamental tree, if the plant has a lot of variegation to the leaf, you know, white or yellow, or maybe it's totally chartreuse leaf, typically it's going to grow much more slowly because it doesn't have the same ability to produce food. It doesn't have as much chlorophyll, you know, for photosynthesis.
Yep.
So that is automatically, by its nature, it's not going to be able to cover the same amount of space. So there's some highly variegated bugleweeds that you can use that are very slow spreading. So I remind people, look for varieties. If you're concerned about spreading too fast, get a variety that has a lot of variegation or gold in it. Here's another example, and it can act as a ground cover, but I usually don't want it to. Spiderwort, you know, Tradescantia.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
A lot of people will, you know, you put one in and it just takes over the landscape, especially some of these purple ones or blue purple. Well, one of the varieties I use that hardly grows, I mean, it's so slow growing, is one that has beautiful golden chartreuse leaves. It's called Sweet Kate. It has beautiful blue-purple flowers, and that one plant, I can put it in and buy it in a gallon pot, for instance, and that'll be basically the same size plant for easily 4 or 5 or 6 years. That's how slow it is to reproduce and spread. Now, again, that's what I wanted from it. I wanted those big strapping gold leaves, almost like an ornamental grass, but I wanted to have those stunning blue-purple flowers opening up in the morning, early afternoon. So I went for that variety, that cultivar, versus some of the solid green leaf varieties, Aspire to Wort, that just don't know where to stop. So that's...
Great suggestions.
Yeah.
Those are wonderful. Jim in Oshkosh, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I've got a 12-tree apple orchard. I've been using pine straw for mulch, so I don't have to mow around them. And
great.
My apples are just awesome. Is that a good thing, pine straw for apple trees?
Again, I'm going to say my specialty is more into the ornamental plants. But, you know, one of the things I say, I'm going to guess yes, because a lot of people use it in different areas. I mean, I think it might slowly impact soil pH. But as with any material I'm using as a mulch or a ground cover, I'm going to check my soil pH every 3 or 4 years to make sure that it's in the right range to allow for the best fruit and flower production. I'm going to defer to maybe Larry might know if pine mulch is best around apple trees. I think of I can't say one way or the other, absolutely.
I think it's fine. And, I mean, you would really have to put a lot down to have an impact on the pH of the soil.
Yeah.
For sure. And for those of pine straw, they're really pine needles, as I guess is what is what we're talking about here. So I wouldn't be too worried about it, but I like your idea, though, of just, you know, keep an eye on it with a soil test every couple of years.
Yeah. You know, what I would say with what the first thing that hits me when I hear an apple orchard, which I love, is deer. I mean, how do you keep deer out of the orchard? Do you have fencing? How do you do that? Do you have deer damage?
You know, I plant apple trees down in the woods.
Okay.
And other people have, as one guy says, I have Ruff, and Ruff is a very big dog. And Ruff likes to be outside.
Yeah, well, that's good. I mean, one of the products I'm using now I just think is outstanding for deer and rabbit is a product called Plant Skid. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Larry.
No.
In the commercial industry, it's really, really popular, but it's slowly coming into the homeowner, into the consumer end of it. It's a blood-based, porcupine blood-based product that is highly effective for keeping deer and rabbit and other critters off, especially in the wintertime. You only apply it once, up to 6 months for winter protection. What a blessing.
And what's it called again?
It's actually a Swedish company is where it was produced initially. Now it's in the States. It's called Plant Skid. Actually, if you were Swedish, you'd say Plant Skid. But it's spelled PlantSkydd. We started carrying it at our garden centers the last couple years, and I'm always curious what people are saying about it, and I ask them when they come back into the garden center. Have had so many people raving about that product because there's so many options out there.
And you know what? We're out of time. Oh, my goodness me. Yeah. Where did it go? I tell you, I hope Carrie, you'll come back and be with us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, thanks so much. She is the author, Carrie Mendez, the author of The Right Size Flower Garden, and we'll be speaking in Wausau on January 23rd at Garden Visions. Go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show to learn more about that. And we'll try to get her back and talk again. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody, but that's sometimes the way it goes. Thanks for listening. Stay with us.